their bathroom yet? You've been in there 7 minutes, to my certain knowledge.
Yes, just finished, Mrs. Pecker. What is it?
As I told you last night, Dr. Patterson, I keep very strict rules in this house for my young gentleman. Breakfast is 8:15 to 8:30. 2 more minutes and I'm scrubbing the frying pan.
I'm coming right down.
Well, I just hope you've left that bathroom if you wish to find it.
In an ideal world, Mrs. Pecker, I wouldn't wish to find it at all. Is this the breakfast room?
Well, you can call it that, dear, if you like. What would you like to start? I've got Rice Krispies. They're not very fresh, I'm afraid. I haven't had many young gentlemen lately.
I see. Snap and crackle, but no pop.
That's right, Dr. Patterson. Just like my daughter, Charlene. Her daddy left home when she was 2. You know she's really taken to you.
Really? I've hardly spoken to her.
Oh, she worships you from afar, Dr. Patterson. She said so last night. I worship him from afar. She said, I think he's lovely. You ought to take her to the pictures one night.
Is that the teenager with the green hair and the rivets in her anorak?
That's her. Lovely Charlene. But there's one thing, Dr. Patterson. I run a decent house, and even if there's no father here, I'll keep a decent family. You once touch her on the clothes, on or off, and I shall insist on matrimony. Now, there's another thing, Dr. Patterson. I don't like to ask, because I know you doctors don't like treating their own landladies, but I am nearly crippled with this bunion. I just draw the curtains and take my stockings off.
I'm not that kind of doctor.
Oh, come on, Dr. Patterson, for me.
We present episode 8 of Patterson, a comedy series in 8 parts by Malcolm Bradbury and Christopher Bigsby.
Hey there, Dr. Patterson.
Oh, Valerie, hello. Ow! Oh!
Gee, you're lying in the road. Did I make you fall off your bike?
No, I was going to do it anyway. It's good to see you, Valerie.
Doctor, did anyone ever suggest to you, out of friendship or anything, you had a death wish?
No, Valerie. They've said I might strangle people or harm small children, but nothing about a death wish.
Well, okay. I saw you come wobbling along on your bike from my room, so I thought I'd step out and say goodbye, and thanks.
Goodbye?
Sure. It's the last week of term. Here I am in Europe. I thought I'd take off somewhere.
But I'll see you next time.
Don't count on it, Dr. Patterson. My undefinable malaise came back. Research is okay, and you meet teachers and all, but I guess maybe the time's come for me to get my head into something else. Life enhancement orientation, or Zen archery. Or maybe I'll take this job I've been offered in this joint in Chicago.
What's that?
Topless waitress on roller skates.
This sounds terrific.
I guess it'll be a slap in the eye for someone.
Valerie, can't we...
No, kid. I must go pack. I thought I'd hitch around France for Christmas. Just me and my backpack.
And your exercise bicycle.
Sure. And my friend.
Friend?
Yeah, I met this really nice guy I'm taking with me. He looks like he needs a vacation. I guess you know him. Hey, Benny, come out of those bushes and say goodbye to Dr. Patterson.
Oh, hello, Dr. Patterson. Goodbye.
Mr. Banerjee, why were you hiding in those bushes like that? Why aren't you asking me about the end of the novel, the nature of existence, the limits of the universe, like you usually do?
Oh, but Dr. Patterson, you answered all those questions most profoundly in Professor Misty's car last Sunday.
I did?
You have told me everything there is to know about the contemporary English novel. And now, I realize from you that none of today's English writers have any interest or value at all. So I think I'm going back to India.
Only after our little trip, Benny. Mr. Banerjee really knows how to relate to a person. How are you spending Christmas, Dr. Patterson?
Oh, I don't know, Valerie. I might go in for Zen Scrabble or Jungian wife swapping. I'll find something. Well, good luck, Valerie. And I'm glad you found out the meaning of life, Mr. Banerjee.
Thank you.
She may not be the whole answer, but she's a good one.
Morning, Dr. Patterson. Come in for your mail. You look a bit gloomy today.
Yes, Mary, I've moved into what I believe are called digs, presumably because they're such a hole, and my students are all leaving
me. I heard about your weekend in Stratford.
Oh, did you? Came through on the telex, did it?
You haven't got much mail. It's just a letter from your wife's solicitor about a legal separation, setting out terms and so on, 3 pages. I didn't open it.
Quite right. You didn't tell Professor Misty, I hope.
I don't think he cares anymore. Now he's retiring as head of department.
Retiring? Why is everybody leaving?
Perhaps he'll tell you. He wanted you to pop in and see him. Just knock and go in.
Oh, fine. That should cheer me up no end.
Enter. Ah. Well, well, if it isn't dear old Patterson.
Sir?
Come in and sit, if you can find a space between... I'm packing up and there's really an awful lot of... Let me get you a drink, Patterson.
Oh.
Not the usual statutory academic glass of sherry. I've got a rather special, somewhere. Heidegger, 1973.
Thank you, Professor Misty. This is very kind.
Here we are. Been open a bit. Since 1973, actually, but that shouldn't do it any harm, should it? I'll just wipe the mould off the cork and then, well, bottoms up, as we used to say in the Navy, was it I was in? Well, Patterson, you find me in jocund mood this morning.
Thank you. So I see, Professor Misty, why?
Oh, you know, term ending, the festive tide almost upon us, Christmas coming, the goose getting fat, Mrs. Misty unwell, cares of office over.
Mrs. Misty's unwell? I'm sorry.
Yes, I left her tied firmly to her bed. It was that weekend in Stratford that finished her, actually, Patterson, having to sleep on the straw in that leaking summer house. I'm used to all that. I was at Oxford, but it's not her cup of tea at all. Well, not to worry too much, Patterson. It's her, not me. Nasty, isn't it? Yes, I can't tell you what a relief it is to give up this lonely office at the top of things.
You mean you did decide to let Amy Spade take over?
Oh, no, not Amy Spade. She turned it down. Said it would interfere with her lay preaching. So then I sat down and I thought to myself, now, who in this department would be, you know, fool enough to take over, for no additional pay whatsoever, an office that is onerous, lonely, and despised? In particularly severe difficulties at the moment because of the financial cuts, no prospects of promotion for anyone, faculty at each other's throats, Marxist agitators everywhere, the entire affairs of the department left, by me actually, in utter and irremediable chaos, and I thought, it came to me, I know just the chap.
Me.
That's it, Patterson. Move in this afternoon, if you like. I've just a few things to shift out. Dahlia Corms, mostly.
Yes, but I don't want to do it, Professor Misty. I have no experience of university administration. I don't understand the system.
Exactly, just the chap. Patterson, let me give you a bit of advice. You know, I once sat next to an old professor of mine from Oxford in my old college, at a Gordy. You know what those are, food and stuff, best minds of Europe lying about in pools of port. Well, he was an extraordinary form, this old 80, if he was a day. Blind as a great hearing aid, dangling from his... could hardly walk, bald as a bat, little spindly legs, fine figure of a man, but mind literally as sharp as a needle. He turned his head towards me. Well, actually, the head steward had to turn it for him, and then he said, and I'll never forget this... Now, what was it? Oh, yes, he said in his quavering old voice, which I will not seek to imitate... Young man, I can tell from just this brief chat we've had that you've a brilliant future before you. You'll fly to the stars. You'll astound the world with your discoveries. Scholarship in your field will never be the same again. Now, am I right? Well, of course, I said yes, and he went on. Johnson, he said, let me pass on to you some wise words that my old tutor said to me in his turn. If you wish to survive in university life, remember four things. Never teach. It dulls the wits. Never head a department. It makes enemies. Eat plenty of walnuts. It prevents constipation. It's always stayed in my mind.
You said four things.
Yes. Never did get the fourth. Old fool dropped dead at my feet. So there you are, Patterson. It's all yours. I shall go off and write my book.
You're writing a book?
Yes. It's easy nowadays, you know. You just buy one of these typewriter things. Then you run your fingers carelessly up and down and words come out. While you're thinking about something quite different. Extraordinary.
What's the book on?
Ah, on. It's on Neville Colophon.
I don't think I've heard of Neville Colophon.
No? You amaze me sometimes, Patterson. The friend of James Joyce, D.H. Lawrence, Marcel Proust, Thomas Mann, Virginia Woolf, Lawrence Durrell, Bethel Brecht, Henry Miller, Jean-Paul Sartre, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, Graham Greene, Iris Murdoch, Barbara Cartland. Never heard of him.
No? What did he write?
Who? James Joyce? Or D.H. Lawrence? Or Marcel Proust?
No. Neville Colophon.
Ah. Nothing. Never wrote a thing. Had a lot of friends, though. I'll have the glass back now, old chap. I want to pack it. I think you'll make a worthy successor, Patterson.
I'm going to clean up this department, Victor. I want to see some high standards now. I shall expect from everyone a decent record of publication, and by that I don't mean two articles in the Bicycling Times.
Oh, Misty certainly knew what he was doing when he appointed you, Patterson.
He's a shrewd old man.
I'll say he is. Getting out like that just before the sitting.
Not as bad as he looks. What? The sitting?
Well, didn't you know? Oh, of course, you're away this weekend, off for the junior year abroad, broad in amorous dalliance. How did that go, by the way?
Fine. No, a total disaster. But what happened when I was away?
Well, Misty went away, too.
Yeah, I know he did. He went to the same hotel.
But counterproductive, isn't it? Taking a professor with you on a dirty weekend? Rather like taking your mother-in-law with you on a honeymoon. Bad for the concentration.
Stop changing the subject.
What happened here over the weekend?
Ah, well, no sooner had Misty got into his Model T Ford and left than Smithson, the czar of linguistics, got out his Tonton Macoute sunglasses, put on army fatigues, rapidly grew a Castro beard and marched out to rally his forces. With infinite cunning, he called a meeting of faculty and students, and he so swayed them with his oratory, grunts mostly, that they voted for the immediate overthrow of the capitalist system. 7-6 with 4 abstentions.
Smithson again? Isn't there anything good to say about him?
Oh, yes, he's biodegradable.
And he's a Marxist?
Of course! Don't you know how to tell an academic Marxist? They always have the best hi-fi system in the university. Oh, yes, with his spellbinding oratory, he explained it all. You see, apparently, in the inexorable process of history, Hegel led to Marx, Marx led to Lenin, Lenin led to Stalin, and then history made this great qualitative leap, and Stalin led to Smithson.
And he means it?
Oh, he means it. He's power mad. Today, the great vowel shift, tomorrow, the world. He's going around now with the 2 hefty henchmen armed with the collected works of Thackeray. They've taken over the bicycle chairs already. You can't miss him. He's got a big badge on his front saying, God is a woman. Melissa's influence. He doesn't really think God's a woman at all. He knows it's him.
You're kidding me, Victor.
Well, we'll see. Oh, look. Hey, there's Melissa now. Toast of the radicals, the Rosa Luxemburg of the English department.
Oh,
hey, join us, Melissa. There's space on my lap.
I don't think so, Victor. I see you're sitting with that bourgeois reactionary, Andrew Patterson. I can find myself another table.
Melissa.
You always were a male chauvinist pig, weren't you? So I suppose it's not surprising to find you a lackey of officialdom as well. There's a people's deputation coming to see you this afternoon to present our non-negotiable demands. I suppose, as puppet head, you ought to be first to see them. Take a look.
You do know each other?
They're nicely typed.
The secretaries are with us.
Good footnotes.
The librarians are with us. In fact, almost everyone's with us except you, Andrew Patterson.
I have a lot of sympathy with your cause. On the other hand...
Yes, the usual liberal waffle. On the one hand this, on the other hand that. As someone once said, if God had been a liberal, we wouldn't have had the 10 commandments, we'd have had the 10 suggestions. Off the liberals, eh, Victor? Those who aren't for us are against us.
Melissa.
Don't try trading on emotion with me, Andrew Patterson. This is a time for men of steel.
Hurt, don't they? There she goes. Oh, Patterson, I wouldn't be in your shoes now. Hell hath no fury like a woman who scorns.
Oh, dear.
And I just saw them building a guillotine in the quad.
Hmm?
Look, never mind, Patterson. Just remember, aristocrats of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your chins.
You'll support me, Victor, won't you?
Well, I would if I could, Patterson, but I'm leaving, you see.
You're leaving?
Yes, they've offered me back my old job at Hull. I thought I'd take it. No radicals there.
Mary? Where's Professor Misty? I want to see him.
He's gone. He went before lunch, Dr. Patterson. He should be at the airport by now.
Then who's in charge here?
Well, you are, Dr. Patterson. For the moment.
Mary, please don't knit. It was knitting started the French Revolution. I'd better call a department meeting.
Well, that should be easy. They're all sitting in Professor Misty's, your office already.
What? Who let him in?
I tried to stop them, but Dr. Smithson said I was a hooligan element and a capitalist roader.
And that convinced you? Who's in there?
Most of them, really. Even Dr. West's sheepdog.
I'd better find if there's, anything they want. There he is!
There's the fascist!
Down with department!
Out,
head!
Out,
down!
Out,
Patterson! Out!
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 They seem to want quite a lot. I'd better go and see the Vice-Chancellor.
Well, this is a very serious situation, Patterson, if you've reported it to me aright. You say they've presented you with a list of non-negotiable demands.
Yes, Vice-Chancellor.
Let me see it. I'm an old hand, Patterson. I remember 68. Riots on the campus at Columbia, students on the march in Paris. Even at Oxford there was a fuss in the JCR and they broke a bottle of wine. Over a theologian, if I remember accurately. What one needs is tactics, Patterson. One has to be seen to give them something. Now, let me see. What do they want? Remove the Vice-Chancellor. Can't have that. Run the university with people's committees. Nonsense, of course. Abolish the syllabus and cease claiming authority in all subjects. Ridiculous. We'd all be out of work. Fire Dr. Patterson. Ah, now there is something we might be able to give way on.
What?
Ah, there you are. Oh, Sir Dr. Patterson, you jolly man.
I'm sorry, Zenobia. We're in the middle of a serious crisis. We can't talk now.
I think we'd better. Too long have I been a mere appendage. I'm leaving you, Rupert.
What?
I'm leaving you, Rupert. It's over. Puff. kaput. I've fallen in love head over heels with someone else.
Excuse this small matter of domestic business, Patterson.
Of course, sir.
You can't have Zenobia.
Ach so, there you are. You think you're such a great man, Führer of this university in your smart suits, talking to the bigwigs, dreaming of your knighthood, and always at your side, the reliable Zenobia. This is my wife, once a great opera singer. Of course, she gave it all up for me. You fool, Rupert. All the time I was secretly singing under another name. All those trips to London, that was not to Harrods. I was singing at Covent Garden.
I don't believe it, Zenobia.
That's not all. For years, under your very noses, I was meeting my lover. Yes, my lover, Rupert. When you go out of the house, zoom, he comes in. When you turn your back, nibble, 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 in the closet. To you, I'm just a bag of old clothes. To him, I'm a glowing, vibrant woman. Enough is enough, Rupert. Now I'm running away with my lover.
Running away?
To my dream, Rupert. Enough this nightmare.
Who the devil is this man?
Ah, you blind fool. You haven't noticed a thing, have you? All these years of flirtations and dalliance, and you haven't noticed a thing. Well, now we come out of the closet. My lover is Professor Misty.
Misty?
We're fleeing back to my lovely Vienna. Already my Liebling's on his way.
You must be mad, Zenobia.
No, sane, deadly sane.
Misty can't possibly find Vienna. When he goes to London, he ends up in Aberdeen.
Don't try to put this obstacle in my path, Rupert. Loafers always find a vic. So, goodbye, you blind fool. I'm Dr. Patterson. You naughty man.
Very operatic woman, my wife. Expect I'll find her down at Tesco's. Now, what were we talking about?
Well, sir.
A sit-in.
Oh, there you are, Patterson. Oh. Thought I'd find you at the Rose and Crown, or dead in a ditch. Give Dr. Patterson his usual, Flossie. Not a French kiss, a pint of bitter.
Thanks, Victor.
Well, how's the revolution up there, Patterson? What happened?
Ah, Victor, it's over.
Really?
Yes, they had another meeting and they voted not to overthrow the capitalist system. 7-6 with 4 abstentions. Amy Spade switched sides.
Did she? So you're the head of department again?
Well, no, not exactly. They voted on that and elected someone else.
Who?
Dr. West.
Oh, not bad. Could have been his sheepdog.
I never wanted it, really, Victor.
No. Well, one of the briefer terms of office in modern history, Patterson.
I hope this means you'll stay, Victor. It wouldn't be the same here without you. Cheers.
Yeah, cheers. Well, I might or might not, depends if they ask me. I'll see how I feel after my Christmas holiday in Corfu.
Really?
Shining beaches, bouzouki music, meat wrapped in stuffed vine leaves where you can't get at it, Amy Spade.
Amy? You're going with Amy Spade?
Well, I have to do something to get her to change size, didn't I?
It was you, Victor.
Think nothing of it, I don't. Hey, what are you doing for Christmas, Patterson?
Me? Oh, I expect I'll just sit in my room at Mrs. Pecker's and write The Dwarf and Shakespeare.
Oh, come on, Patterson. It's Christmas. Give yourself a present. Find yourself a nice girl.
I don't think so, Victor. Victor, do you ever think about the salmon?
What?
The salmon. Did you know that the salmon swims thousands of miles through enormous oceans, through seas that would terrify the eyes of you, halfway round the world and then up rivers, jumping rocks and half killing themselves, struggling against the currents and fighting till they've hardly any strength left? Did you know that? And do you know why the salmon performs this monumental task of delicate navigation which requires such intelligence and guts?
Do you?
The salmon, Victor, undergoes all of this to get laid. And there, as the whale said to the plankton, is food for thought.
Sounds fishy to me. Anyway, Patterson, perhaps you should let your nets down where they are.
What do you mean?
Well, you could do worse than Jane, couldn't you? At least you don't have to remember a new telephone number.
Jane. Jane.
Jane!
Who's that?
Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes.
Patty, it's almost midnight. What is this? What do you want?
I want you, the lovely you. Ah, Juliet, the moon doth shine on thy crimpoline nighty.
Go away!
Chant.
Who's that out there at this time of night?
Ah, Mrs. Jackson.
Who is that?
I am your Conservative candidate. I'm sorry to disturb you so late at night, but I just dropped by to invite you to a public emasculation of mine workers we're holding at the church hall.
Go away, Mr. Patterson, or I shall call the police.
Again? Better let me in, Jane, before she starts moving her furniture around again.
Good God, look at you. You've been drinking.
Ah, you've caught me out. I've been drinking at the fountain of eternal youth.
The Rose and Crown.
There's no poetry in your soul.
Not at 12 o'clock at night. All right, I'll come down.
And there was a woman, and she had 10 talents, and she lost one of her talents and was never so popular again. Meanwhile, in a small California town, a young girl was growing up. In Kharkov, to the west of Smolensk, a Latvian dentist tapped out the terse message for his masters to read over coffee in a small office opening onto the Hexengasse in Hamburg. Don't, she whispered in a heavy Swiss accent as his sunburned body pressed against her own. Oh, there you are.
Well?
Pardon?
Well?
Is that all you can say? I come back into your life after 2 months, and all you can say is, well, what would have happened if Stanley had said that to Livingstone? It would have set the cause of empire back 100 years.
Patty, I'm tired, and I want to go to bed.
Fine, I'll turn the gas off and be up in a minute.
What?
To think I once thought of you as a conversationalist.
Patty, you are not stopping here.
What's the matter? Have you got the milkman up there?
If I had, that's none of your business.
I see. Are you getting enough? My God.
Come on, Patty, get it over with. What do you want?
As General MacArthur said, I have returned.
Well, as President Truman said, sod off.
I knew it was a mistake marrying a history graduate.
I gather I'm in for one of your performances.
Hmm?
Oh, get out of my hall, Patty. Ow!
No. I apologize. Now, listen. The simple, unvarnished truth is... Unvarnished? I have seen the error of my ways. For some reason, the idea of steaming nappies, strained foods, and institutional sex played according to the rules of the Young Girls Christian Association fogged my mind to the basic facts of life. You see before you a repentant husband.
Oh, yes.
Beneath this flippant exterior lies a bewildered man.
Right.
It so happens that I've come to realize that you possess certain virtues I was blind to before. There is, for example... considerable advantage in someone who doesn't think, as one of my students did the other day, that Henry James and his brother were shot in the back by Cole Younger. There are virtues in someone who isn't into hot tub therapy and Hawaiian mind-bending. I've come to see that even sausages are better than the booze, drugs, and half-baked Marxism many in this university quaff as sustenance. In short, after going off in all directions save the right one... I appear to love you and came back to see if you love me.
What's wrong? I thought I heard a noise.
My God, the milkman cometh. Bloody Cuthbertson.
Is he interfering with you?
I've got news for you, Cuthbertson. Interfering with people went out of fashion with the decline of the suspender belt.
The point is, what are you doing here?
No. The point is, what are you doing here?
I am protecting your wife, whom you abandoned.
Was it you who gave her that gun?
She was here on her own. She needed protection.
What, from the Waffen-SS? Do you realize I nearly kill a policeman with that gun, not to mention destroying a perfectly good bottle of VP Ruby Red Port Type Wine?
You're a homicidal maniac, Dr. Patterson.
From the vintner's point of view, perhaps. Who put those orange things in here?
What?
Those orange things flapping round in that bowl.
Spencer's goldfish.
I will not have aquatic vertebrates in my living room.
It is not your living room. I think you'd better go.
Spencer is living in the spare room.
I said I think you'd better go.
That's a curious remark to make to your landlord, isn't it?
Landlord?
Yes, it so happens that I'm the proud owner of the mortgage on this magnificent edifice. And I'm about to exercise one of the few privileges remaining to me under the Rent Act by booting you out of here in your Marks and Spencer's stripies.
I don't think you understand our relationship,
do you? Oh, only too well, I'm afraid.
You never have had any idea how to treat Jane, have you? Your mental attitude is a function of your body chemistry. If you eat properly, if you avoid alcohol and caffeine...
Now, hold on. I didn't come here for a quick course in nutrition. Now, let's get this straight. You're setting yourself up as my wife's spiritual guru while quietly screwing her between the sauna bath and the dish of boiled stinging nettles.
You're determined not to take me seriously, aren't you?
You stand there in your wincey-eared pyjamas with your glasses held together with sticking plaster and tell me you've led my wife into a low-calorie life of sin and then have the gall to say I'm not serious?
You abandoned her.
I did not abandon her.
I set her on one side to mature. Well, Cuthbertson, the yeast's done its work now, and I've come to give you a secret message. And the message that I brought across the vasts of this great city is, sod off.
Look!
No, son. It's been a hard day. But eventually, if you're hit over the head hard enough, some sort of truth gets through to you. And the main truth I've learned is that I belong here, with Jane. So you can take your clover honey and your whole wheat bread, and you can hit the road, son.
Now, look here.
No, don't. There's nothing more dangerous than someone who's seen the light. You're leaving now.
Let him get his clothes, Andrew.
But Jane...
All right, I'll give you precisely 5 minutes to gather your squalid possessions together. Your horse liniment, your Charles Atlas pamphlets, your kung fu kit, and leave this semi-detached property of considerable character. Scat!
Go on, Spencer. I think you'd better go.
Well, if you say so, Mrs. Patterson.
My God, there's a smell of socks in here.
It's Cuthbertson. He has bad feet.
Got any food? I'm starving.
It's almost half... I'll have a look. I think there could be some cold sausages.
Sausages? Oh, that'll do fine. With a bottle of claret.
Claret?
It's my birthday tomorrow.
I did remember.
I'll be 35.
I know.
My 36th year. That's almost 40. My God, I'm getting on.
Aren't we all? Do you want those sausages?
No, I just thought. It's tomorrow already. You go upstairs, and I'll just kick that bastard out.
Okay. I'll cook you something special tomorrow. A mushroom omelette. Andrew, I don't think...
It's all right, Jane. Really, it is. Maybe. And there was a Pharisee, and he went to the Lord. Natasha, Natasha. She heard her name echoing through the night. From out of the darkness glided a woman in black, and he knew it was death. A scarf round her face and her head. That's the way the world will end, he thought. Not with a bang, but a wimple.
Heidi, what was that noise?
I've taken that gun and committed murder.
Oh, no, Spencer!
No, Spencer's bloody goldfish. One quick blast from Sonny Boy's Luger and those little orange buggers have had their chips.
Oh, you fool! You'll wake the children. Have you put the cat out?
I may have offended her a little, that's all.
Oh, come on, Patty, come to bed.
Coming, Jane.
That was the last episode of Patterson.
Patty, you are back for good now, aren't you?
For good? Why did the whale swallow Jonah? Tell me that.
Oh, for God's sake, Patty.
You know, that's the smartest thing you've said in 3 years.
In that episode, you heard Louis Fyander as Patterson, with Judy Parfitt as Jane, Maureen Lipman as Melissa, Richard Vernon as Professor Misty, Frances Jeter as Mary, Mrs. Jackson and Verity, Louine Willoughby as Valerie Candle, Irene Prador as Mrs. Vice-Chancellor, Jack May as Probity, Richard O'Callaghan as Cuthbertson, Hugh Thomas as Victor, Tarek Yunus as Banerjee, Patricia Hayes as the Landlady, and John Barron as the Vice-Chancellor. Patterson was written by Malcolm Bradbury and Christopher Bigsby, and the series was produced by Geoffrey Perkins.